Chapter 84. Didn't come back next day. Didn't come back next week. Miss Sissa bills printed, saying that, if he'd come back, he should be forgiven everything, which was very liberal, seeing that he hadn't done nothing at all. The canals was dragged, and for 2 months afterwards, whenever a body turned up, it was carried, as a regular thing, straight off to the Sassett shop. Hosever, none on them answered. So they gave out, that he'd run away, and she kept on the business. One Saturday night, a little, thin, old gentleman comes into the shop in a great passion and says, "Are you the Miss Sisso this here shop?" "Yes, I am," says she. "Well, ma'am," says he, "then I've just looked in to say that me and my family ain't a-goin' to be choked for nothing. And more than that, ma'am," he says, "you'll allow me to observe that as you don't use the primest parts of the meat in the manufacturer o' sausages, I'd think you'd find beef come nearly as cheap as buttons." "As buttons, sir?" says she. "Buttons, ma'am," says the little old gentleman, unfolding a bit of paper and showing 20 or 30 halves o' buttons. "Nice seasoning for sausages, is trousers buttons, ma'am." "They're my husband's buttons," says the widder, beginning to faint. "What?" screams the little old gentleman, turning worry pale. "I see it all," says the widder. In a fit of temporary insanity he rashly converted hisself into sausages. "And so he had, sir," apostrophe said Mr. Weller, looking steadily into Mr. Pickwick's horror-stricken countenance, "or else he'd been drawed into the engine. But however that might have been, the little old gentleman, who had been remarkably partial to sausages all his life, rushed out o' the shop in a wild state, and was never heard on afterwards." Apostrophe, apostrophe, the relation of this affecting incident of private life brought master and man to Mr. Perker's chambers. Lowten, holding the door half open, was in conversation with a rustily clad, miserable-looking man, in boots without toes and gloves without fingers. There were traces of privation and suffering, almost of despair, in his lank and careworn countenance. He felt his poverty, for he shrank to the dark side of the staircase as Mr. Pickwick approached. "It's very unfortunate," apostrophe said the stranger, with a sigh. "Very," apostrophe said Lowten, scribbling his name on the doorpost with his pen, and rubbing it out again with the feather. "Will you leave a message for him?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "when do you think he'll be back?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired the stranger. "Quite uncertain," apostrophe replied Lowten, winking at Mr. Pickwick, as the stranger cast his eyes towards the ground. "You don't think it would be of any use my waiting for him?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the stranger, looking wistfully into the office. "Oh, no, I'm sure it wouldn't," apostrophe replied the clerk, moving a little more into the center of the doorway. "He's certain not to be back this week, and it's a chance whether he will be next, for when Perker once gets out of town, he's never in a hurry to come back again." Apostrophe, out of town. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick. "Dear me, how unfortunate." Apostrophe, "don't go away, Mr. Pickwick," apostrophe said Lowten, "I've got a letter for you." Apostrophe, the stranger, seeming to hesitate, once more looked towards the ground, and the clerk winked slyly at Mr. Pickwick, as if to intimate that some exquisite piece of humor was going forward, though what it was Mr. Pickwick could not for the life of him divine. "Step in, Mr. Pickwick," apostrophe said Lowten. "Well, will you leave a message, Mr. Waddy, or will you call again?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "ask him to be so kind as to leave out word what has been done in my business," apostrophe said the man. "For God's sake, don't neglect it, Mr. Lowten." Apostrophe, "no, no, I won't forget it," apostrophe replied the clerk. "Walk in, Mr. Pickwick." "Good morning, Mr. Waddy. It's a fine day for walking, isn't it?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, seeing that the stranger still lingered, he beckoned Sam Weller to follow his master in and shut the door in his face. There never was such a pestering bankrupt as that since the world began, I do believe. Said Lo Ten, throwing down his pen with the air of an injured man. His affairs haven't been in chancery quite 4 years yet, and I'm DD, if he don't come worrying here twice a week. Step this way, Mr. Pickwick. Perker is in, and he'll see you, I know. Devilish cold, he added pettishly, standing at that door, wasting one's time with such seedy vagabonds. Having very vehemently stirred a particularly large fire with a particularly small poker, the clerk led the way to his principal's private room, and announced Mr. Pickwick. Ah, my dear sir, said little Mr. Perker, bustling up from his chair. Well, my dear sir, and what's the news about your matter, eh? Anything more about our friends in Freeman's Court? They've not been sleeping, I know that. Ah, they're very smart fellows, very smart, indeed. As the little man concluded, he took an emphatic pinch of snuff, as a tribute to the smartness of Messrs. Dodson and Fogg. They are great scoundrels, said Mr. Pickwick. Said the little man, that's a matter of opinion, you know, and we won't dispute about terms, because of course you can't be expected to view these subjects with a professional eye. Well, we've done everything that's necessary. I have retained Sergeant Snubbin. Is he a good man? Inquired Mr. Pickwick. Good man. Replied Perker. Bless your heart and soul, my dear sir, Sergeant Snubbin is at the very top of his profession. Gets treble the business of any man in court engaged in every case. You needn't mention it abroad, but we say we of the profession, that Sergeant Snubbin leads the court by the nose. The little man took another pinch of snuff as he made this communication, and nodded mysteriously to Mr. Pickwick. They have subpoenaed my three friends, said Mr. Pickwick. Ah, of course they would, replied Perker. Important witnesses. Saw you in a delicate situation. But she fainted of her own accord, said Mr. Pickwick. She threw herself into my arms. Very likely, my dear sir, replied Perker. Very likely and very natural. Nothing more so, my dear sir, nothing. But who's to prove it? They have subpoenaed my servant too, said Mr. Pickwick, quitting the other point, for there Mr. Perker's question had somewhat staggered him. Sam? Said Perker. Mr. Pickwick replied in the affirmative. Of course, my dear sir, of course. I knew they would. I could have told you that, a month ago. You know, my dear sir, if you will take the management of your affairs into your own hands, after entrusting them to your solicitor, you must also take the consequences. Here Mr. Perker drew himself up with conscious dignity, and brushed some stray grains of snuff from his shirt frill. And what do they want him to prove? Asked Mr. Pickwick, after 2 or 3 minutes' silence. That you sent him up to the plaintiff's to make some offer of a compromise, I suppose, replied Perker. It don't matter much, though. I don't think many counsel could get a great deal out of him. I don't think they could, said Mr. Pickwick, smiling, despite his vexation, at the idea of Sam's appearance as a witness. What course do we pursue? We have only one to adopt, my dear sir, replied Perker. Cross-examine the witnesses. Trust to Snubbin's eloquence. Throw dust in the eyes of the judge. Throw ourselves on the jury. And suppose the verdict is against me? Said Mr. Pickwick. Mr. Perker smiled, took a very long pinch of snuff, stirred the fire, shrugged his shoulders, and remained expressively silent. You mean that in that case I must pay the damages? Said Mr. Pickwick, who had watched this telegraphic answer with considerable sternness. Perker gave the fire another very unnecessary poke, and said, "I am afraid so." Apostrophe, "Then I beg to announce to you my unalterable determination to pay no damages whatever," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, most emphatically. "None, Perker. Not a pound, not a penny of my money shall find its way into the pockets of Dodson and Fogg. That is my deliberate and irrevocable determination." Apostrophe Mr. Pickwick gave a heavy blow on the table before him, in confirmation of the irrevocability of his intention. "Very well, my dear sir, very well," apostrophe said Perker. "You know best, of course." "Apostrophe, of course, apostrophe," replied Mr. Pickwick hastily. "Where does Sergeant Snubbin live?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, in Lincoln's Inn Old Square," apostrophe replied Perker. "I should like to see him," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. "See Sergeant Snubbin, my dear sir," apostrophe, apostrophe, rejoined Perker, in utter amazement. "Pooh, pooh, my dear sir, impossible. See Sergeant Snubbin. Bless you, my dear sir, such a thing was never heard of, without a consultation fee being previously paid, and a consultation fixed. It couldn't be done, my dear sir, it couldn't be done." Apostrophe, Mr. Pickwick, however, had made up his mind, not only that it could be done, but that it should be done, and the consequence was, that within 10 minutes, after he had received the assurance that the thing was impossible, he was conducted by his solicitor into the outer office of the great Sergeant Snubbin himself. It was an uncarpeted room of tolerable dimensions, with a large writing table drawn up near the fire, the base top of which had long since lost all claim to its original hue of green, and had gradually grown gray with dust and age, except where all traces of its natural color were obliterated by ink stains. Upon the table were numerous little bundles of papers tied with red tape, and behind it sat an elderly clerk, whose sleek appearance and heavy gold watch chain presented imposing indications of the extensive and lucrative practice of Mr. Sergeant Snubbin. "Is the sergeant in his room, Mr. Mallard?" apostrophe apostrophe inquired Perker, offering his box with all imaginable courtesy. "Yes, he is," apostrophe was the reply, "but he's very busy. Look here, not an opinion given yet on any one of these cases, and an expedition fee paid with all of them." Apostrophe the clerk smiled as he said this, and inhaled the pinch of snuff with a zest which seemed to be compounded of a fondness for snuff and a relish for fees. "Something like practice that," apostrophe said Perker. "Yes," apostrophe said the barrister's clerk, producing his own box, and offering it with the greatest cordiality, "and the best of it is, that as nobody alive except myself can read the sergeant's writing, they are obliged to wait for the opinions, when he has given them, till I have copied them, ha ha ha." Apostrophe apostrophe, which makes good for we know who, besides the sergeant, and draws a little more out of the clients, eh? Apostrophe apostrophe said Perker. Ha, ha, ha. Apostrophe apostrophe at this the sergeant's clerk laughed again, not a noisy boisterous laugh, but a silent, internal chuckle, which Mr. Pickwick disliked to hear. When a man bleeds inwardly, it is a dangerous thing for himself, but when he laughs inwardly, it bodes no good to other people. "You haven't made me out that little list of the fees that I'm in your debt, have you?" apostrophe apostrophe said Perker. "No, I have not," apostrophe replied the clerk. "I wish you would," apostrophe said Perker. "Let me have them, and I'll send you a check. But I suppose you're too busy pocketing the ready money to think of the debtors, eh? Ha, ha, ha." Apostrophe this sally seemed to tickle the clerk amazingly, and he once more enjoyed a little quiet laugh to himself. "But, Mr. Mallard, my dear friend," apostrophe said Perker, suddenly recovering his gravity, and drawing the great man into a corner, by the lapel of his coat, "you must persuade the sergeant to see me, and my client here. Apostrophe, come, Come, apostrophe said the clerk. That's not bad either. See the sergeant. Come, that's too absurd. Apostrophe notwithstanding the absurdity of the proposal, however, the clerk allowed himself to be gently drawn beyond the hearing of Mr. Pickwick, and after a short conversation conducted in whispers, walked softly down a little dark passage, and disappeared into the legal luminary's sanctum, whence he shortly returned on tiptoe, and informed Mr. Perker and Mr. Pickwick that the sergeant had been prevailed upon, in violation of all established rules and customs, to admit them at once. Mr. Sergeant Snubbins was a lantern-faced, sallow-complexioned man, of about 45, or as the novels say he might be 50. He had that dull-looking, boiled eye which is often to be seen in the heads of people who have applied themselves during many years to a weary and laborious course of study, and which would have been sufficient, without the additional eyeglass which dangled from a broad black ribbon round his neck, to warn a stranger that he was very near-sighted. His hair was thin and weak, which was partly attributable to his having never devoted much time to its arrangement, and partly to his having worn for 25 the forensic wig which hung on a block beside him. The marks of hair powder on his coat collar, and the ill-washed and worst-tied white neckerchief round his throat, showed that he had not found leisure, since he left the court, to make any alteration in his dress, while the slovenly style of the remainder of his costume warranted the inference that his personal appearance would not have been very much improved if he had. Books of practice, heaps of papers, and opened letters were scattered over the table, without any attempt at order or arrangement. The furniture of the room was old and rickety. The doors of the bookcase were rotting in their hinges. The dust flew out from the carpet in little clouds at every step. The blinds were yellow with age and dirt. The state of everything in the room showed, with a clearness not to be mistaken, that Mr. Sergeant Snubbin was far too much occupied with his professional pursuits to take any great heed or regard of his personal comforts. The sergeant was writing when his clients entered. He bowed abstractedly when Mr. Pickwick was introduced by his solicitor, and then, motioning them to a seat, put his pen carefully in the inkstand, nursed his left leg, and waited to be spoken to. Apostrophe Mr. Pickwick is the defendant in Bartle and Pickwick, Sergeant Snubbin, apostrophe said Perker. I am retained in that, am I? Apostrophe said the sergeant. You are, sir, apostrophe replied Perker. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.